I've just started to eliminate a lot of the scalps that are really low-probability plays, and I've been starting to work more on the high-probability plays and adding incremental size to them. Also, G-Man examines the trades from the SMB chop tracker when his P&L spikes, and concentrates on how to trade these plays even better. At one point, G-Man noticed that while he cannot scalp certain stocks like MasterCard, MA, he can position trade them off of key intraday levels. His statistics instructed that he could not trade MA in and out. But G-Man found a new way to profit off of MA. Further, G-Man's stats tell him not only what sectors he is trading poorly, but also the specific setups that are not profitable. So now he can trade all sectors. He just makes adjustments precipitated by his trading statistics. Now that is a chop. I really do not remember when we named G-Man the head trader. He had been with us since month two. And one day we looked up and he really was the best trader on our desk. Steve and I had started to handle more firm-related business, recruiting, legal, clearing deals, and so on, and could not focus on trading as much. So we needed someone to run the desk full-time who we knew would steward our capital well and lead the desk. Making G-Man our head trader was our best personnel decision to date. How good is G-Man? G-Man has been stopped out once since he began with us. He's the guy who can beat you in a race, giving you a start halfway to the finish line. Let me explain. G-Man missed one open and an 8-point up move in AIG because he was working on an SMB training tool. He received a text from a trader on the desk at 12:30 p.m. informing him of the AIG move. So he flipped open his Lightspeed platform and spent the rest of the day trying to catch our intraday leaders. By 1 p.m., he was up $1,000. By 2 p.m., he was up $1,800. By 3 p.m., $2,200. And by 4 p.m., $4,000. He almost did it. On most days, he is like an ATM. And by the way, AIG moved only 3 more points that intraday. G-Man enjoys his life as much as any young trader on our desk, mixing diligent work with hard playing. If you walk onto our trading floor at 4:01 p.m. on a Friday, it is quite possible that his SMB coffee mug will be filled with Johnny Walker Red. It does not go unnoticed on our desk that the trader most likely to be found cozying up to a young female out on the town in New York City is G-Man. The indefatigable G-Man has been known to make an occasional journey to Atlantic City on a weekday night and make it back, barely, for the open. The markets are a master challenge for G-Man to conquer with his staggering mental acuity, and New York City, with all that it has to offer the young person, is his playground. G-Man will go on to become one of the best intraday traders on the street. I have it on good authority that he is about to be named to a new Best Traders Under 30 list. G-Man recently purchased a partnership with SMB, rounding out his journey from I quit to head trader to partner. The best thing that ever happened to our firm was the day he walked into our trading firm. Next, let's meet the Joe DiMaggio of trading, the most consistent intraday prop trader on the street, Z-Money. Z-Money. Make discipline a strength. When Z-Money, Z-Mush, Mush, Mushy, and Z are also acceptable nicknames, talks, it is hard to understand what he's saying. It's not that he's speaking a different language. He's just so soft-spoken that one has to prompt him several times to speak up. He mixes a low-volume voice with an exceedingly quick tempo, only compounding the problem. Imagine a jackhammer without the noise, and this is how he shares his words with the world. Speech recognition patterns aside, Z-Money is the most consistent trader on our desk. Not the most profitable, but the most consistent. He was positive for 2 years straight. How is that even possible? In this regard, he is somewhat of an ungodly phenomenon. Z came to us from another firm that had stopped making money when Hybrid arrived at the NYSC, so he was searching for a new home. A friend of SMB's, Ray Holland, managing member from Avatar Securities, proposed a sit-down. Mushy wasn't making much money at his other firm, at least that's what I thought he was saying. I found him down to earth and humble, and in the end we were lucky to find him. Thanks, Ray. We have a bias for traders who have traded elsewhere, are struggling, and want to improve. Once they have bought into our philosophy, they tend to do well with us. First, they appreciate the value that we offer more than the new trader, who has no idea how left alone you can be at another firm. Second, they have some built-in trading skills that just need to be utilized most effectively. Hence, their learning curve with us is much shorter. Z Mush was no exception. We got him in the stocks in play. We surrounded him with traders who shared valuable information. We stressed the importance of understanding what setups worked best for him through statistical analysis. We made sure he was prepared for the day with our SMB AM meeting. Mushy quietly and unassumingly did all the work we asked of him, and he started to make money. New traders sometimes believe that the path to becoming a big-time trader is paved by the necessary losses of significant money. If I can lose $30,000, then I can learn to make $30,000, the thinking goes. To me, this makes no sense at all. While losses might teach you good lessons at the beginning of your career, losing too much is irresponsible. The truth is that you must first learn to make $100 before you can make $200 and build on these positive results. I would label Z the most consistent trader at our firm, but that would not be painting the most precise picture. Z is like the Joe DiMaggio of trading, the legendary Yankee great who holds the record for consecutive games with at least one hit, and even that lasted only 56 games. As I write this book, Mush has not had a negative trading day in the last 2 years. That's 500 or more straight trading days. I guess that is how we derived his nickname, Z Money. I'm not always sure how these names get started, but this one is par for the course. Mushy has his setups, and he sticks with them. He loves to watch a big offer decrement, pay the offer, and sell the stock when it slows into the upmove. Z Money is so proficient at this scalp trade that we have named it after him, the Mush Trade. This setup offers a high win rate and little risk, and he just scans the markets for the setups that work for him. As I've learned, the same setups don't last forever, so G-Man pushes Z-Money to expand his playbook every once in a while. When G-Man finds a trades to hold, he sends it Mush's way and prods him to get into this trade. As traders, we should spend each day stepping outside of our comfort zone so we improve. This is what G-Man is offering Z-Money, and Mushy just keeps getting better. The other day he held the volatile AIG for 3 points. A trade he would never have made last year. After the close of every trading day, you can find Z-Money without fail at his desk watching tape of his trading. After the close, he constantly reviews his trades in his mind. Discipline is his strength. He sticks with what works while expanding his playbook with new trades that work for him. Just like the sun rises every AM, Z-Money is positive. The fun is watching him make more and more as he continually improves. Give me a desk full of Z-Monies, and I will show you one grateful trading partner and an extremely profitable firm. Build from your positive base. Those who trade professionally wish to make a lot of money. Prop traders are not trying to make $200 a day. They want to make much more. They have rarely failed at anything they have done before. Perhaps they have been told their whole life that they were special. Most are the smartest person in any room. They are uninterested in being ordinary, and they aren't. But all of this can be damaging. So these special, ambitious people start to do some thinking. On a treacherous, rainy day like the end of 2008 in New York City, they might let their minds wander. I am ready to start making some serious money, they may think. I really need to lay into some stocks with more size. Certainly will be considered. I would look really cool in that new Benz on the back of the news today. I am better than that Dr. Momentum. Does he ever stop talking, by the way? I want to be the man. Just some advice. Your risk-adjusted return is more important than your gross P&L. You shouldn't try to make $5,000 a day by losing $5,000. You shouldn't do this after 10 years, and you certainly shouldn't do this when you start. Often, new traders think their ability to lose a lot symbolizes their potential to make much more. No, it doesn't. You should never lose more than half of your median intraday gains. If you are making $1,000 a day, and a down day previously for you was negative $500, then now allowing yourself to lose negative $5,000 doesn't mean you will now be able to make $5,000. It means now you can lose $5,000. Some new traders just don't understand this. If you want to make $5,000 a day, you must first be able to make $500 consistently, downside of $250. Then you must show that you can make $750 consistently, downside $375. Then you must demonstrate that you can make $1,000 consistently, downside $500. Then $1,500, downside $750. Then $2,000, downside $1,000. You get my point. But for some very strange reason, traders think making that jump from $1,000 to $5,000 requires them to lose $5,000 in a day. Again, no, it doesn't. You build from a base. You build from your profitable base. The way to make more is to make more while contemporaneously avoiding proportionally greater downside risk. And if you can't make more than $2,000 in a day with a downside of $1,000, then stay at this level for a while. There is nothing wrong with making that kind of money. Keep pushing yourself to get better, but do not force it. One of the smartest traders on our desk has been making $600 a day, and I know he wants to make more, and one day he will. But he forced it recently, and he didn't make more than $600. He took a huge rip. He took a rip that will set him back weeks. I was talking with Steve about this the other day, and he became very animated. Steve is ultra calm, so it is amusing to watch him get animated. But it usually means that he is about to make a very good point. And he did. Steve shared that new traders who are making $600 a day can't take these rips for another very important reason. Unlike Steve or myself, they cannot make back $5,000. They do not have the skills. If Steve rips up 5K, he can make that back in less than an hour, but a new trader cannot. If you are making $600 a day, it will take you weeks to make back a huge rip. And this game is about putting money in your pocket, not throwing away a few weeks' worth of gains. So build from your positive base. All of the traders presented in this chapter built from a positive base to become successful. Push yourself to get better. But do not force your progression. Losing more means you can lose more. It doesn't mean you can make more. Let's meet a trader who just crept up on us, became good, damn good, and is still getting better. The Yipster. Improve every day. I can't say I noticed the Yipster's trading for the first 6 months he was with us. Every once in a while, on the subway ride home, Steve would brief me that the Yipster's numbers were starting to get better. We preach that you ought to take the beginning slowly, that you ought to get a little bit better every day. In the Yipster, we have found the poster trader for this mantra. The Yipster wins my award for most improved trader. This is the highest compliment I can offer. After all, this is what trading is all about. Embracing the philosophy to get better every day. How many people can accept that they must be self-critical every day and improve? Not many. Many just want to get to a place and rest. Not the Yipster. Not with his trading. If you ask the Yipster how he improved every day, his answer, with a New York City-born twang, is focusing on being consistent, focusing on fundamentals, focusing on doing the right things. Obviously, hard work also. You know, working, working, working on everything that I could possibly do to improve on my game. You mean you did not have to visit any Mensa meetings? Oh. Ask the Yipster how long will it take to realize his full potential, and he answers, I don't think anybody can truly, truly master the markets. I mean, it's just something that you can get better at, but I really don't think it's something that you can master. So, I mean, I'll be working on it. I think my entire career, my entire life. This is how athletes make their respective halls of fame, and the Yipster could be headed in that direction. The Yipster keeps a detailed spreadsheet of all of his work. Every single order, every single trade since day one has been recorded. The Yipster records his tape and watches his trades every other day. The Yipster says, "I just think there are no shortcuts." He searches for plays that he could trade better. He looks for ways to add size to his best setups. He does all of this to get better every day. Do you have this philosophy as a trader? This is a guy who makes serious money regularly now, almost every day, with maybe one negative day a month. As I said, he was completely off of our radar for the first 6 months of his trading. But he just kept working, improving, and now he is one of our best traders. It is not where you start, it is where you are headed that most counts. At the start of 2010, SMB gravitated toward longer holding periods for our trades, trades to hold. Ask the Yipster what he is working on. I'm focusing on my trades to hold with bigger size. Every so often I notice a big push from him, indicating progress with this goal. I can't say that this progress jumps off the leaderboard, but then again, when he started, he took his time getting better. Why would this be any different? Let's introduce our good-looking TV star, the most optimistic and personable trader on our desk. J. Toma. Practice positive perseverance. In the spring of 2009, I got a phone call from a woman named Rachel Pine. I had no idea who she was, but my friend and writing partner Chris Gillick had given her my name. Rachel was consulting for CNBC, trying to staff more traders for the network's Fast Money program. CNBC loved her since she knew our community well from her time as a marketing executive at Trader Monthly magazine. We are not media shy, and her call made my day. Rachel came to our office to meet us, and liking what she saw, she set up an interview between the Fast Money producers and Steve, J. Toma, and myself. CNBC sent a car for us. We hopped in and started our trek to a place so far out of the way, there had to be a reward upon arrival, the CNBC campus in Inglewood Cliffs across the river. I did a double take as I noticed Steve did not have any socks on. Typical. Steve couldn't care less about this meeting. Here we were, having built our company from nothing 3 years ago, to our big meeting with the most watched business network in the world. This was a big moment, and my partner and best friend didn't even bother to wear socks. But Steve was just annoyed to be off the desk in the middle of the trading day to visit a bunch of TV people. Steve doesn't like, get, or do traditional media. Steve later enthusiastically agreed to do 3 Stock Twits TV shows a week, and during the trading day, the first web-native financial television network. Did I mention he also didn't shave? Of course, I was pretty excited. Exposure on CNBC would only help in our recruiting efforts to attract young, talented traders to our firm. And since we are only as good as the players we coach, this was one of the most important business meetings in our firm's young history. Did I mention my partner wasn't wearing socks? This was a big deal for us, not because people would watch us, per se, but rather there would be footage of us on CNBC. Forever. We would display it on our website and SMB blog, and there would be no mistaking that this SMB Capital upstart knew intraday trading. J. Toma was never supposed to go on CNBC. Steve really was. J. Toma was a second option I was offering. Some people like a cheeseburger. Steve prefers a veggie burger. And J. Toma and Steve are as different as a cheeseburger and veggie burger, so CNBC had options. There was an initial meeting with some bright, very young, energetic, fast-talking staffers to vet us. We passed that first test and got sent up to the boss's office. Steve kept growing more annoyed. Another meeting? We need to get back to the office and trade," his body language announced. And so we start our sit-down with the bosses. I explain who everyone is and why we are there. The producer of Fast Money starts making this motion with her hands to speed things up. I have to admit I was a little taken aback by this. Not to be egotistical, but no one has told me to start talking faster in 4 years. I am the co-founder of a successful proprietary trading firm. I am the one who cuts people off, ends meetings, and shifts the discussion. And often, due to my time constraints, I am curt. And here was this producer gesturing at me to talk faster. I actually loved it. A powerful TV executive, the boss, I'm not going to use her name because, honestly, I am a little scared of her. She is really tough, but also someone who has a crystal clear vision of what her programming ought to offer. Sat at her desk and scanned the room in our first 15 seconds of this important meeting. She asked Steve, "You don't wear socks?" My worst nightmare was about to come true. Steve blew our chance of being a regular on CNBC because to him, this meeting was just a nuisance, keeping him from his first love, trading. And then one of the bright staffers summarized some of what Fast Money offered on CNBC. He talked much faster than I did, so apparently this was required in front of the boss. Steve was inaudible, but I knew exactly what he was thinking. That is a great young TV staffer, but how the hell will that help anyone make money? And then Steve explained how CNBC should do things differently. He did so in a correcting, almost condescending fashion. Strike two. Jay Thoma was our last hope. I was not there to audition. Steve wasn't wearing socks and had clearly communicated his lack of interest for being involved in anything CNBC. As the meeting continued on, I could see him becoming more uninterested. I swear I thought he was going to ask the boss to switch seats with him, log on to his Lightspeed account, and start trading. Jay Thoma offered his background, but more importantly, he fought for a chance. He wanted to be on this leading financial news network. He was positive, complimentary, and likable with his presentation. When he stopped, the producer of Fast Money smiled and said, "I like him. He's cute." And that is how SMB got on CNBC. That is how, as Jay Thoma likes to describe it, he became the face of SMB. Freaking TV stars. And this is how Jay Thoma has been a successful trader throughout his career. Jay Thoma is off the charts, positive, and persistent. His wife wouldn't go out with him when they first met, so he re-offered a date at Nobu, one of the most delicious and expensive restaurants in the world. She accepted, as this is a dining experience not to be missed, no matter who the company. When we first started prop trading, the goal was to trade your own money. We made 10-30% of our P&L and needed to bank about $250,000 to trade our own account. This was not even enough money, so we had to borrow another $250,000 at 12% interest to sufficiently fund our account. We essentially had to make millions for our firm before we ever had enough of our own personal money to trade our own account. And when we did, we got to keep 100% of our profits after paying commissions on our trades, which were as much as 600% higher than they are today. Ouch. Jay Thoma did whatever he had to do. He was the annoying guy on the floor who talked to anyone about trading at any time, even at the bar and on the weekends, but he was learning. Jay Thoma would hop in a car down to the Jersey Shore to talk trading with the best traders at our firm, where they relaxed on the weekend. Jay Thoma did not have a beach house or even a summer share. He just went down for the ride, hoping to gain nuggets from these successful traders. He would come in early, 7 a.m., to rip through charts with the traders versed in technical analysis. He did anything to get better, like the Yipster has done a decade later. Not surprisingly, Jay Thoma soon made enough to trade his own account. Not bad for a guy not yet 23 years old. But in his first 3 months, he lost almost all of his money, more than $200,000. He was down to his last $50,000. the average trader would become depressed. I might. But Jay Thoma shrugged it off. He sought out a prominent performance psychologist and worked to improve some psychological hurdles, which were hindering his trading. Jay Thoma had become afraid to trade, and he needed to get his fearlessness back. The shrink worked. More than a decade later, he is still doing what he loves, trading. This sports psychologist offered training techniques to improve his performance, which he still utilizes today. A daily journal was suggested and implemented. A plan for every trade was discussed and is now followed. Goals were set and surpassed. Favorite setups were identified and exploited. Ask Jay Thoma what has helped him the most in his professional career, and you get this response. By the way, I had to edit his response by a good 5 minutes. Jay Thoma admittedly loves to talk. It's about doing the little things every single day and making yourself better, and that's my goal. My goal in this part of my life is to get better every day. If I do something every day to make myself better, I know eventually my P&L is going to show. Those horrid 3 months at the beginning of his career were an opportunity to learn and get better. That $200,000 in losses was parlayed into many millions at a later date. Before video review, there was the Jay Thoma review, and he still does this today. Jay Thoma also owns a private equity fund, which requires some travel. After a flight to Texas, Jay Thoma sat in his hotel room, stared at the ceiling, and reviewed his trading, tick for tick, of his trading day. And before video, this was an exercise he did habitually after every close. He discovered the trades that worked best for him and made more of them. He identified what did not work for him and eliminated those trades. Often behind closed doors, Jay Thoma will get frustrated at a trader on our desk that he is mentoring. He will begin, "I just don't get so-and-so. Doesn't he understand this opportunity?" Or Jay Thoma will utter, "I just don't get these guys. Don't they want to make money?" Jay Thoma believes you work as hard as you have to and do whatever it takes to make it. He did. And this whole trading thing almost never happened for Jay Thoma. He was in D.C. waiting to go to law school and working around the clock to pay his bills. His girlfriend at the time was upset she continually had to wait for him to end one of his late-night jobs. Her brother talked him into a trading job in New York City so the happy couple would have more time together. Jay Thoma accepted, put law school aside, and moved to New York City. The day Jay Thoma arrived was April 1st, 2006. Before his start date, Jay Thoma broke up with his girlfriend. He arrived and someone impolitely met him before he could walk onto the trading floor. "You broke up with the boss's sister, dude. Obviously you don't have a job here anymore." So Jay Thoma, humiliated, turned to walk out of the office. And then everyone exploded into laughter. It was an April Fool's joke. Traders ask, "I'm right, right?" I received an email from a trader who is a superstar at reviewing his work. What follows is an email he sent me in the spring of 2009. "I need to slow things down and do exactly this. Keep doing exactly what I'm doing, in preparation, in hard work, in planning trades, sharing ideas, and reviewing work. Have more patience so that you can only trade each stock from the best levels. This will result in less volume overall and likely fewer losing trades. Once you're in a stock, focus on just that one, even if it means just waiting on it several minutes. Hit the sweep key if your price is 5 cents or more out of the money and you haven't already got out on offer. Bid. Simple. Only way to kick this, finally." This was my response. "You have developed bad habits when it comes to hitting out of stocks that trade against you. You need to form good habits. I would spend 15 minutes every day on the demo working on hitting out of stocks. Pick an active stock, set an exit price, and if the stock hits this price, then get the F out. you must condition your mind to habitually hit out of stocks that exceed your exit price. Also, you should have a conversation with yourself. Why are you so interested in proving that you are correct with a position? No one cares about your opinion. No one cares that you think a stock will go up or down. No one. Most importantly, trading is not about being right. Trading is a game of math. It is about finding setups that offer you a good risk-reward and pulling the trigger. 30-40% of these trades will result in a loss. This is the game. Dr. Steinbarger blogged this a narcissistic desire to be correct. You are trying to be right. Consistently profitable traders just make good trades. They accept that they cannot control the results. Think about it. This trader must develop the habit of hitting stocks that trade against him, and he needs to do some drills every day so that he develops this skill. But it is also important for him to understand himself better. Understanding that he has a psychological need to be right will help develop this skill. The reason he is not hitting stocks that trade against him is because he has not developed this habit. The reason he did not develop this habit, though most easily do, is because he has a psychological need to be correct. Understanding this will help him conquer this trading flaw. We all have flaws. There are things we must all work on. Sometimes having a conversation with yourself can help. The market has taught me what is important to become successful as a trader. The traders we just met possess characteristics for you to model that will truly impact your trading results. Next, I will share with you a way to measure your trades. Let's go discuss your most important task as a trader. One good trade. Chapter 2. One good trade. Do not judge a trade based upon its results. A profitable trade may or may not have been a good trade, what I call one good trade. A loser may have been one good trade. If your fundamentals for a trade are sound, then that is one good trade. Consistently profitable traders obsess about making one good trade and not money. Your job is to make one good trade, and then one good trade, and then one good trade. Here are some statements I do not like to hear on my desk. Damn, I cut too early. It went up a point after I sold it. I was scared to buy XYZ because I thought it would trade lower. What a rip. I loaded up and XYZ traded against me. What a stupid trade. I am just long. The stock is going higher. All of the statements here are about results. Such thinking is your enemy. I am not trying to make money as a trader. My focus is on doing the right thing. All I can ask for is excellent risk-reward opportunities. And then I execute. Being good at my job requires an obsession to my trading fundamentals. Money is just the byproduct of me executing fundamentally solid trades. But what is an excellent risk-reward setup? And how do I define one? In this chapter, we'll introduce a good trade, one good trade, based on seven fundamentals, and then share an example. But let's start by defining the opposite of one good trade. Defining a bad sale. The most common statement I hear from new prop traders is, "Damn, I sold that stock too early." And without fail, they search for me to discuss this perceived error. Here's how a typical conversation with a new trader usually goes. Bella: what was your trading plan? Trader: 30 was holding the bid, so I got long. I was going to sell when the stock traded higher and slowed. I sold the stock when it slowed, but it traded a point higher. Bella: why was that a bad sale? That sounds about right. Trader: well, the stock traded a point higher. Bella: so why does that mean you made a bad sale? Trader: I missed out on the whole point of the move. Most who just heard the previous exchange will wonder why I am not in agreement. Well, I am not. Or more accurately, I might not be. It depends. If the new trader followed his detailed exit plan, then he made one good trade. This is great. He did his job. Now the new trader may have been slow to re-enter to catch the next point up move with a new one good trade, but his original sale was correct. If we see an opportunity soon after one good trade, then we will immediately re-enter. Remember, we make one good trade, and then one good trade, and then one good trade. We do not make one good trade and then take a nap. Perhaps the new trader did a poor job of establishing his exit plan. Perhaps the setup initially called for a longer holding period. Once a new trader realizes this, he should know where and how to fix his problem. We may need a list of all of these longer holding trades with defined exit plans, distinguishing from shorter term trades with different exits. You are a trader, not an investor. It's important to remember this mantra. I am a trader and not an investor. In fact, new traders ought to put this phrase on a post-it on their screens when they begin. In an ideal world, traders catch a stock's entire intraday move. Sometimes you'll get all 3 points of an anticipated 3-point move. On occasion, you'll catch 4.5 points of a 3-point move. And yes, sometimes you'll sell or cover too early. But the analysis is always the same. Did you make one good trade, and then one good trade? That is all you can do. If a stock is a sale, and I sell, then that stock trades up 10 points, and at no time could I identify one good trade, then my initial sale was correct. I do not care where that stock trades after a proper sale, nor should the new trader. Bella, are you ever scared to buy in front of support because the stock may drop? A new trader asked once in a trade cast. My response? No. If I buy in front of support, the stock drops, I exit and take a loss. Assuming I had sound reasoning for doing it and followed my rules, this is still one good trade. To borrow phraseology from the raging Cajun James Carville, it's the process, stupid. Michael Lewis profiled Shane Battier in the No Stats All-Star for the New York Times and offers a spot-on example of the importance of the process. Shane Battier said about defending Kobe Bryant, "My job is not to keep him from scoring points, but to make him as inefficient as possible." With his team, the Houston Rockets, up by 2 points, Battier forced Bryant to hoist a long jumper that Kobe misses 86.3% of his attempts. Kobe buried the three-pointer, winning the contest for the Lakers. Lewis writes, as almost a lesson to the intraday trader, the process had gone just as he, Battier, hoped. The outcome he never could control. Overvaluing a rip. Let's talk about taking a rip. G-Man was trading HPQ. The resistance level was 35.38. HPQ held above this level, so he got long 7,000 shares. HPQ quickly dropped to 35.15, and G-Man exited for a loss. He took a rip. I heard, expletive deleted, "What a rip!" Who cares? Did he make one good trade? Traders too often overvalue a rip. They find a great setup, it does not work out, and they take a rip. The next time this setup appears, they are hesitant to enter. And then, invariably, the stock goes up 3 straight points. Ever happened to you? Of course it has. How can you judge this specific trading setup if you are sabotaging the results? Your rip must be blended with a potential 3-point chop. Then judge that trading setup. But we overvalue the rip and then do not catch the easy trade. That is why we instruct our guys not to care about the results. Again, it's the process, stupid. I am just long. Oh, and this is my favorite one. I am just long. I am not selling. Great. If you were running a mutual fund or were Warren Buffett directing Berkshire Hathaway, then maybe this phrase would be sound. But remember, our job is to trade. We'll leave the investing to those who invest. If you're just long, You must manage your position. One good trade is not arrogantly concluding that you know best. As 2008 certainly taught us, anything can happen at any time. So if you have a great position, and it is working, you still must manage your position. You can be slow to sell, but you must be looking for clues of when to scale out. One of our traders pulled this stunt with a position in POT at 100. It was a home run. This idea was first discovered by our desk after watching Dan Fitzgerald of StockMarketMentor.com on CNBC. Like some late 1990s day trading jackass, stockholder is long making phone calls in my office 2 points in the money. Stockholder, of course, has no idea how to trade this, since he is yapping away in my office. By the way, what the hell is he doing using my office? Stockholder comes out of my office and was met with a tongue lashing from me. What the hell are you doing opening a position and not watching it? Don't you ever do that again. If you want to gamble, I hear the Mohegan Sun is offering discounts this weekend. I continued to explain what would have happened if POT climbed 3 points, a huge seller appeared, POT went back to 100, all while he was jabbering away on the phone. He would have lost the opportunity to lock in a 3-point gain. We would have lost money for the firm and himself. He immediately understood my point. We meet in our conference room twice per week, and traders present their one good trade via video. Also, they prepare a Word document embedded in their video that explains how they have followed our 7 fundamentals for this trade. Sometimes our more experienced traders chirp that they do not get as much out of the OGT video review sessions as the other tradecasts. OGT tradecasts are very basic. That is the point. We reinforce our fundamentals. Next, we'll discuss the 7 fundamentals that are important to our firm. Welcome to your front row seat of how a prop firm defines a fundamentally sound trade. How closely we follow these fundamentals is how we judge our trades. The fundamentals. At SMB, we ask our traders to follow a set of 7 fundamentals before entering every trade. Our fundamentals are 1. Proper preparation. 2. Hard work. 3. Patience. 4. A detailed plan before every trade. 5. Discipline. 6. Communication. 7. Replaying important trades. If they follow all of these tenets in their trading from start to finish, then they have made one good trade. And this is what we do, or certainly try to do. And we do it over and over again. We make one good trade, and then one good trade, and then one good trade. I created this term based on my following of, no surprise, Coach K at Duke. When his team is up by 30 points, he screams from the sideline, "Next play!" Similarly, if his team is down by 15, which isn't all that often, he still yells, "Next play!" Since I don't run a basketball team, it's hard for me to yell to my traders, "Next play!" Instead, I say, "One good trade!" Bear with me on this one, but we stuck to our one good trade guns on CNBC, much to their chagrin. In the summer of 2009, Steve and I were preparing Jay Thoma for one of his many appearances on CNBC's Fast Money. As is the network's protocol, the show's staffer sent over some sample questions before the appearance. One of the questions that host Melissa Lee was to ask Jay Thoma was, "Do you see the market up or down from here at the end of the year?" Jay Thoma's initial response during preparation was, "I have no clue." But this is why we prepare. Steve offered an expanded, "I have no clue" answer. "I am not Nostradamus. I am not an economist. We only have 2 quarters of market data. After 2 more, then I will know. As of right now, I have no idea." I wasn't crazy about this at all. Jay Thoma politicked the answer on our behalf. Hey, that's why he's on TV. Instead of offering a year-end projection, he offered levels that were important to us in the short term. He basically didn't answer the question and said what we wanted, honoring the principle of one good trade. But this principle that we're not sure where the market is headed in 6 months is important. We are not certain where the market will trade tomorrow, for that matter. We are trained in the short term, and we know what we know. We can't afford to be like some of these bearish economists who joke with reporters after their doomsday forecast is met with, "I'm right once every 10 years." If CNBC really wants to know where the market will be in 6 months, they can ask some rising fund manager who has a 50% chance of being proven right down the road. I prefer, in fact I demand, that our win rate is higher. And we do our best to ensure this success by making one good trade at a time. In the fall of 2008, when the banks were getting obliterated and you could hit GS down 10 points and still catch an extra 3 points, our young traders were making a ton of money. I remember with a huge smile two of our more talented new traders up more than $20,000, imploring the other to stay focused. "Keep going, moneymaker," Dr. Momentum would encourage. And then during the next hour came these words from Moneymaker pushing, "Keep trading, Dr. Momentum. Don't be satisfied." The day does not end until the bell rings. These gunners were up some pretty good money for first-year traders, but they embraced the principle of not being satisfied. A decade before, most independent retail traders would have been on the golf course by 2 p.m. after making five figures going long on a tech stock IPO. While IPO mania ended soon after, the crash of 2008 provided similar swings, just in the other direction. In this case, instead of panicking or calling it a day, Dr. Momentum and Moneymaker stuck to their fundamentals. Like a Buddhist monk who lives in the moment, their focus was singular. This is one good trade in its full essence. Traders ask, "I'm still trading poorly. What now?" I get a ton of emails from developing traders who ask me questions about how to improve after a stretch of struggling. These traders, with their confidence low, usually make the blanket statement that their trading has been, well, poor. As traders, we need to be more specific about what we're doing poorly. We need a template by which to judge ourselves. And this template should be soaked in trading fundamentals. Is it your stock selection? Is it your entry points? Is it your psychology? "I am doing poorly" doesn't mean anything. Let me offer an example. Following is an email that I received from an accomplished professional musician. If I told you who this new trader tours with, as a member of his band, you would with 100% certainty have listened to his music. I took my sister to hear the singer-songwriter with whom this trader plays, and she thought I was the coolest brother alive. You cannot obtain a higher level of success in music than this author. Rockstar wrote to me, "Hi, Mike. I wrote to you last week, the DNDN day, after I'd had a rip after a string of profitable days. I subsequently had four consecutive positive days in the $300 to $500 range. I was feeling solid. I mentioned to Roy that since mid-April, when I discovered your blog and came to visit in New York City, I've had an about-face in my trading. Not only was I positive 12 of 13 days, I was getting free rebates because I was adding liquidity to over 80% of my volume. I made graphs in Excel of my day's trades, and they formed mostly steady upward trending lines. I looked to find my weak spots in the day. Then, today, I lost it. My demons took over. I reverted to sloppy bad habits. I got big. I held losers. I was in multiple positions bigger than I should have been. I wanted so badly not to finish in the red that I made things much worse. Today I did not behave like the trader I have been the last 2 weeks. It is a disgusting feeling, an overwhelming feeling of shame and waste. I was just beginning to feel like I could see the light at the end of the tunnel. Not that I had mastered anything, but just by absorbing all I have from your blog, site, and approach to trading, I had made a turn for the better, and I hadn't even started the training program yet. I have this awful pattern. I work up small profits a few days in a row. I build on that. When I get up a certain amount in my account, I have a day where I lose it. My number one issue is not so much that I can't make money, it's that I can't keep it. I did so much wrong today, and to add insult to injury, the stock I lost the most in was MGM. and then I read the blog and realized I gave my money to Steve. I guess if I'm leaning toward a question here, it is this. When you were in your first month's trading and were down large, how did you finally turn it around? Did you ever feel like you couldn't do it? I am very much looking forward to learning from you guys. I feel like I can be great at this, but I was a disaster today, and it cost me. My last 2 weeks said I had promise. Today said get out of the casino. Thanks. I responded to his email by posting it on the SMB blog, with his permission, of course. I did not want to be blacklisted from future performances when his band played in New York City. I asked our readers to offer advice to this developing trader, in addition to offering my own thoughts. Our online community responded with great enthusiasm. This was indeed a fun exercise. This email is an example of a talented person who had not yet learned how to judge his trading, and this is very common. He is focusing on his losses as evidence that he traded poorly. We, as prop traders, focus on the process and not our results. Again, this is the essence of one good trade. Rockstar has one issue. He must learn to hit stocks that trade against him. This is covered by one of our fundamentals, discipline. You must have the discipline to hit a stock that has exceeded your exit price. With one good trade, he would have recognized this flaw and sought to eliminate this weakness. Rockstar would not have felt lost. There would not have been an email to some trading guy, me in this case, whom he knew only from the blogosphere. Rockstar would be empowered to make his own adjustments. But too many traders lack good fundamentals. In fact, most don't have any, and they don't know that they are supposed to have them. So when I respond to any of these types of inquiries, Rockstar is not the only one, I offer a suggestion to think of each trade as one good trade. When new prop traders begin at our firm, we ask that they judge each trade based upon whether they followed our seven fundamentals or not. We are essentially asking developing traders to evaluate their execution, not their P&L. You can make a series of one good trades and still be negative for the day, but it is unlikely that if we make a series of one good trades over a month-long period, that we will be down overall. Proper preparation. By failing to prepare, you are preparing to fail. John Wooden. I love this phrase from teacher John Wooden. He was the head coach of UCLA basketball from 1948 to 1975, and at one point his teams won seven straight NCAA titles, a record to which no other team has come close. The aphorism is so simple, yet it says so much. There are two parts to proper preparation for us. One, the preparation necessary before the bell rings, and two, the specific trading information you must obtain before you can make a trade. Let's discuss. Steve and I were invited to speak in early 2009 at Kirshner Trading Group, a prop firm in Austin, Texas. Jason Gardner, head of trading at Kirshner, is an old friend from back in the day and invited us to speak with his traders. Kirshner holds a Saturday seminar for his traders once a month. The company flies in traders in our business to offer ideas for their traders to consider, and I guess it was our turn. So we hopped on to JetBlue and headed down to Austin. I offered to talk about anything they wanted. They chose a trader's day, which covers how we prepare before the open. Admittedly, I had always wanted to visit Austin, and it's an awesome town. They say the only thing wrong with Austin is that it is surrounded by Texas. Great food, great music, clean, and if that isn't enough, there's a city full of University of Texas, UT, women. Also, I was hoping to sneak in a few rounds of golf. Like great basketball coaches who learn from other coaches, they borrow plays, they learn new defensive schemes. I was interested in learning from Kirshner. And we did. Kirshner has an amazing facility with 18,000 square feet of trading space dedicated to performance for the developing trader. They do some industry innovative stuff with their filters and advanced statistical analysis of trader performance. Steve and I left with new ideas to consider. Developing prop traders compete against the brightest of minds, those better capitalized, many with more experience, and sometimes even traders with better information. We know that many fail attempting to become a successful prop trader. As intraday traders, our margin of error is very small. Shouldn't we put ourselves in the best position to compete against our competition by preparing properly? With these kinds of odds against us, failing to prepare properly is preparing to fail. Following is a checklist of things you can do to put yourself in the best position to compete in the markets. This job is what you make of it. We offer these ideas for your benefit. Read briefing.com before bed and start thinking about some stocks to trade for the morning. In an August 2009 Wall Street Journal article, Stephen Schoenfeld, considered by many as the godfather of the prop trading industry, admitted he sleeps only 3 to 4 hours a night, awakening early to think about trading setups for the next day. We should all be so lucky, as Schoenfeld reportedly took home $200 million in 2008 and built himself a 9-hole golf course in his backyard. Where are they trading in the after hours? Jot down these prices and compare them to their pre-market prices. Get to the office early. Every once in a while, around 8 a.m., there will be an opportunity to make quick money on a breaking news story. If you live far away from the office, get on that 5-something a.m. train. It will give you an edge. Also, valuable information can be obtained by watching stocks trade in the pre-market. What are the ranges of the stocks you're watching? How much volume are some stocks doing? Further, the earlier you arrive, the more time you have to leaf through news. Sometimes in those extra minutes you find the stock of the day that you wouldn't have if you had spent less time researching. Moreover, you have extra time to ask members of your desk about a stock in play and obtain their feedback. Most prop traders do not arrive later than 7:30 a.m. Certainly experienced traders with a system can stroll in later, and New York Stock Exchange traders can stroll in later than NASDAQ traders. 8 o'clock a.m. is the latest that most serious traders arrive. Read briefing.com again in the morning and pick a few stocks. Think about your style and determine the best two stocks of the day for you. Compile statistics such as daily volume, important technical levels, intraday range, and short interest. At SMB, we have developed an SMB stock data sheet for such information. Set alerts for the stocks that did not make the cut but are worth some attention. Other pretty good ideas that did not make your two stocks cut should still not be discarded. Create a roadmap for your morning. Develop some plans as to when you might take a position in one of your stocks. If you see the XYZ scenario, then you will buy at this price. Continue creating if-then scenarios for each outcome. Consider the different ways the stocks you have picked might trade. Will they sell off first and then be bought for the rest of the day? Will the stock quickly climb in the morning trading session and search for a seller? Will you be completely wrong and the stock will just trade lower? Under what scenarios should you aggressively buy the stock? Are there easier stocks to trade? After you have narrowed your stocks to a few and have gathered all the information necessary, keep asking yourself if there are easier stocks to trade. Listen carefully during the morning meeting. Review your index cards, reminders to yourself, and the best of the old-school techniques before the open. Prepare mentally. Visualize a great trading day. Perform your visualization exercises. Today will be a great day. Prepare physically. Drink some water to hydrate yourself during the morning stretch. Get comfortable in your seat. Breathe. Review charts. After the close, review the charts of top price and volume gainers and losers. Also, check the charts on the stocks that are hot. Find excellent entry points and set your alerts for such prices. Consider developing a basket of stocks and regularly review the charts of the stocks in your basket. All these little things make big things happen. Do them consistently and the profits will follow. But proper preparation for an intraday prop trader is also possessing specific information. On our desk, we do not make a trade unless we know the average volume, daily range, important technical levels, short interest, and fresh news for our stocks. Only armed with this information can we make one good trade. Proper preparation is not enough to make one good trade. Hard work,